Welcome, brothers and sisters. Here are some highlights from this month's program. We'll discuss the many ways that prayer can help us resist temptations. For example, we'll see how prayer helped Narciso leave behind practices that conflicted with Bible principles. Last year, millions were delighted to receive the revised New World Translation in Spanish. We'll go behind the scenes and see what it took to produce this translation of God's Word. Among Jehovah's most endearing qualities is His willingness to forgive. Our new music video reminds us that with Jehovah's help, we too can forgive others. This is JW Broadcasting. This month, we're going to discuss the theme, Pray Continually So That You May Not Enter Into Temptation. Those words of Jesus are recorded at Matthew 26, verse 41. In this discussion, we'll answer three important questions. 1. Why did Jesus pray? 2. What temptations did he face? And 3. What lessons can we learn from Jesus' example? Let's start by reading that verse together. That's Matthew 26 and verse 41. Keep on the watch and pray continually so that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit, of course, is eager or willing, but the flesh is weak. Why did Jesus pray? Jesus uttered these words on the final night before his execution. No doubt this was the most difficult evening that Jesus had ever faced. The surrounding verses tell us that he began to feel grieved and to be greatly troubled. It's hard for us to comprehend fully the stress and pressure Jesus was facing on that night. He knew that Satan was about to throw everything he could at him. Jesus also knew that he'd soon die an agonizing death. But something else was even harder for him to handle. He realized that he was about to be falsely charged and convicted of the despicable crime of blasphemy against Jehovah's holy name. The study note on Matthew 26, verse 39 says, Jesus no doubt felt great concern over the reproach that his death, as one charged with blasphemy and sedition, could bring on God, moving him to pray that this cup pass away from him. In the face of all that pressure, would Jesus remain faithful until death? The lives of countless people hung in the balance. Even more important, his Father's reputation was involved. Under all that intense emotional stress, what did Jesus do? He prayed, not just once, but three times. Notice how Luke describes what happened, as recorded at Luke 22 and verse 44. But he was in such agony that he kept praying more earnestly, and his sweat became as drops of blood falling to the ground. What's the lesson for us? Well, think about it. Jesus knew Satan well. Jesus had observed from heaven all the temptations that Satan uses in his efforts to ensnare God's servants. Yet Jesus did not feel that he could easily handle whatever the tempter might place before him. So this is a clear lesson for us. If the perfect Son of God felt the need to pray for divine help and strength, how much more so should we? How appropriate, then, is the admonition, pray continually so that you may not enter into temptation. But what does it mean to enter into temptation? The Watchtower back in 1951 explained, we ourselves under Satan's influence, create the temptation by thinking how nice it would be to do or have something contrary to God's will, and then not dismissing the desire created by this improper thinking, but considering it more and more. In this way, we are drawn out and led to ignore God's counsel and warning. We enter into temptation. Prayer helps us when we face temptation. It helps us to focus on what Jehovah wants us to do and to ask Him for the strength not to enter into temptation. Our second question: what temptations did Jesus face while here on earth? We probably immediately think of the occasion shortly after Jesus' baptism, when He was tempted 3 times by the devil. Let's quickly summarize those 3 temptations. First, Jesus was asked to turn stones into bread at a time when He was extremely hungry. Basically, Satan appealed to Jesus' desire for food. However, Jesus immediately rejected the temptation to satisfy that desire in an inappropriate way. Second, Satan challenged Jesus to throw Himself off the temple battlement. Jesus rejected this temptation as well. Why? Because He knew that such a spectacular display would amount to a prideful testing of Jehovah. Finally, Satan offered Jesus all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. But at what price? Satan demanded that Jesus offer Him in return an act of worship. What was Jesus' answer? He flatly refused, saying, "Go away, Satan." Have you had to face similar temptations? Well, you might quickly answer, "No one has asked me to turn stones into bread or to jump off a tall building, and certainly no one has offered me the rulership of all the governments in the world." But notice, please, we said similar, not the same. So have you faced similar temptations? No doubt you have. Most of us have faced temptations involving fleshly desires. It may have been temptations to commit immorality, or temptations that appealed to greed, or an unbalanced concern about material things. Other temptations may have appealed to our pride, or tested our humility, or our desire to impress others. And who of us hasn't been tempted by opportunities offered to us by Satan's world for wealth, power, or position? No matter what temptation comes our way, though, remember Jesus' words, "Pray continually so that you may not enter into temptation." But were those the only temptations that Jesus faced? No. How do we know? Well, notice Luke's words found at Luke chapter 4 and verse 13. "So the devil, having finished all the temptation, departed from him until another convenient time." Did Satan ever come back again to tempt Jesus? He must have, because of what we're told at Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15. Let's read that. "For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tested in all respects as we have, but without sin." Have you ever wondered what are the convenient times Satan selected to test Jesus? Well, let's consider some possibilities. One example occurred in 32 CE, about 2.5 years after the initial temptations. Please turn to John chapter 6 and verse 15. "Then Jesus, knowing they were about to come and seize Him to make Him king, withdrew again to the mountain all alone." This seems like a similar temptation to what Jesus had already faced. But this time, the setting was different. Satan didn't directly offer the kingship to Jesus. There was no demand for Jesus to worship the devil. Rather, those following Jesus wanted to make Him their king. this temptation was going to be by popular demand. How did Jesus react? Well, even before they could make their move, Jesus withdrew from them to a mountain just by himself. And what did he do on the mountain? We find the answer in a detail added in the parallel account recorded by Matthew. Let's read it together. It's Matthew 14 and verse 23. After sending the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. Yes, Jesus went there not just to avoid the crowds, but to pray. The third question, what lesson can we learn from Jesus' example? Even though we may have passed the test or avoided entering into temptation in the past, we shouldn't be surprised if a similar temptation may arise again, but in a different form or situation, and at a convenient time. For whom? For Satan, not us. Another occasion occurred when Jesus and his apostles were in the vicinity of Mount Hermon, near Caesarea Philippi. Jesus' apostles had just acknowledged him as the Christ, the Son of the living God. So Jesus took the opportunity to expand their thinking further. Notice what's recorded at Matthew chapter 16 and verse 21. From that time forward, Jesus began explaining to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised up. What was the reaction of his apostles to this information? Let's read on in verse 22. At this, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Be kind to yourself, Lord. You will not have this happen to you at all." Although these words were uttered by a close friend, Jesus immediately recognized that they reflected Satan's wishes, not Jehovah's. So he firmly responded, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, because you think not God's thoughts, but those of men." Although this account doesn't specifically refer to Jesus praying at that time, we know that Jesus was a man of prayer. The Apostle Paul tells us at Hebrews 5:7 that during his life on earth, Christ offered up supplications and also petitions with strong outcries and tears. So no doubt those prayers helped Jesus to focus on the reason why he came to earth. That clear focus helped him to see that Peter's misguided counsel would only help to further the tempter's cause. What does this teach us? This shows us that temptations don't always come from those who are Jehovah's enemies. Some who are close to us may even serve Satan's ends unintentionally, as was the case with Peter. It could be an employer, a workmate, a schoolmate, a friend, a relative, a parent, a brother, or a marriage mate. Let's examine another example of how Satan returned to Jesus. This time, it was by means of the religious leaders. They attacked Jesus verbally, misquoting scripture, and hurling senseless accusations at him. But Jesus understood what they were up to, and frankly told them, "You are from your father the devil." We shouldn't be surprised if apostates and other opposers use similar tactics today. Just as Jesus was accused of blasphemy and political sedition, so too God's people have been labeled as extremists and have been the victims of all sorts of false accusations. Like Jesus, we remember who really is behind all these attacks: Satan, the great tempter. What will help us to avoid the temptation of giving up because of discouragement? How can we successfully handle all these type of attacks? Paul tells us what to do. We read at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 11, "Put on the complete suit of armor from God, so that you may be able to stand firm against the crafty acts of the devil." After speaking about the importance of putting on the spiritual suit of armor, Paul goes on to say at verse 18 that this should be done together with every form of prayer and supplication, as we carry on prayer on every occasion in spirit. So what have we learned from our discussion? It seems that Satan didn't try again to tempt Jesus directly, but he was persistent. He kept coming back in different guises. He used others to give Jesus wrong advice, to oppose and ridicule him, as well as to try to make him a king. Perhaps we've rejected some serious temptations in the past, but remember, Satan doesn't give up on us just because he failed in the past. At a time convenient to him, he may come back to tempt us with something completely different, or the same temptation dressed up in a different form. So what's the key to not entering into temptation? We need to remember and apply Jesus' admonition: pray continually so that you may not enter into temptation. So far, we've discussed how we could enter into temptation to do something wrong. However, we may also be tempted not to do something right. For example, although we know that we should forgive another person for something they have done against us, perhaps we may enter into the temptation of avoiding that person and not forgiving them, even though there may be a basis for doing so. What can help us in such a situation? Again, the answer is, pray for Jehovah's help. This is the theme of our music video for this month. It involves a very painful situation between a mother and a daughter. Let's see the role of prayer in starting to resolve what might seem to be an impossible problem.
I've got this grudge, I'm holding it in, but it's so heavy, it pulls me down. I wish I could turn this around. I understand the need to forgive, but it's not easy if it's not.
Jehovah.
I'm sure this video touched our hearts. What a difficult situation. And of course, such situations are not resolved overnight. Some wounds take a long time to heal. But it's possible to start the process of healing by trying to forgive. But we can't do it alone. Remember what our song beautifully emphasized? Keep praying, Jehovah. Please help me. Help me forgive freely. In our next video, we'll see another example of how prayer helps us today. Narciso Garcia worked hard to bring his life in harmony with Bible principles, but it wasn't easy. Notice how he dealt with temptations similar to those Jesus faced.
I sweated blood to train myself in martial arts. So when I joined a big competition, I won the fight. My life changed. I became a bodyguard of a well-known politician and taught martial arts to some popular celebrities. My students, my boss, and his family, they all became part of my life. But I was still looking for something. One day, some Jehovah's Witnesses came by and gave me a tract. I was surprised and really happy to learn God's name. I thought, this could be what I've been looking for. So I accepted a Bible study, and I realized that I owed everything to God. When I attended my first meeting, I saw how humble and caring the witnesses were. But my neighbors made fun of me. I wanted to beat them because I knew I could. I was ashamed that I couldn't do anything to defend Jehovah's name. Then one morning, before going to the meeting, for the first time, I approached Jehovah in prayer, asking him to give me courage. I couldn't do it alone. After that prayer, I felt that Jehovah really strengthened me. And I humbly told the neighbors that I was going to the Kingdom Hall. Since then, I've always prayed to Jehovah when making decisions. I needed to leave martial arts. I had to quit my job as a bodyguard and stop carrying guns. Doing His will wasn't always easy, but Jehovah gave me the courage to do so. My boss asked me to visit him. He offered me a new car and double my salary. His offer was very tempting, So I went to the washroom and intensely prayed again to Jehovah for courage. Jehovah, help me, please, I said. I can't do this on my own. In the end, I chose Jehovah. Jehovah is more precious to me than anything this world could offer. I told him, sorry, but I'm not accepting your offer. It felt like losing a family in death. Eventually, I got baptized. I realized that it didn't matter what people thought about me. It's how Jehovah sees me that matters. Now, I am very grateful to be with the brothers in serving Jehovah. I am now serving as a regular pioneer. And this is the life that I had been looking for.
How was Narciso tempted? When his neighbors made fun of him for going to the kingdom hall, he thought about using these and going back to using martial arts. Yes, ridicule tested Narciso's humility. But through prayer, he was able to speak calmly and confidently with his neighbors. Narciso's boss tempted him with a new car and a raise. What did Narciso do? He immediately went to a quiet place and prayed intensely. Jehovah gave him the courage to make the right decision. When we face similar temptations, we can be confident that through prayer, Jehovah will help us to do the right thing. One way Jehovah responds to prayer is by directing us to the Scriptures. There we find wonderful examples of faithful servants who overcame all sorts of challenges. In the following dramatization, let's see what we can learn from the Apostle Peter.
After working unassigned territory, I made up my mind to put in my application for regular pioneer. However, things were going really well at work. Is this the right time to make a drastic change?
A new foreign language group is being formed in our congregation.
There's no way I'm joining. Do you know how difficult it is?
Maybe this isn't right for me. The culture and language are so different.
What do you think?
With our youngest now in his own assignment,
maybe we could serve where the need is greater. Like we did before the kids.
But we're not that energetic couple anymore.
Maybe it's too much.
I shared my concerns about pioneering with someone who's been doing it for a long time. He reminded me of the Apostle Peter's example. He was a fisherman by trade, but Jesus knew he could be so much more. Peter hadn't caught anything all night. But with Jesus next to him, things would be different. But Peter felt overwhelmed.
Simon. Stop being afraid. From now on, you will be catching men alive.
The ministry would be his life's work.
The Apostle Peter faced a situation similar to mine in Syrian Antioch. Initially, he associated freely with Gentile Christians. But then, some from the congregation in Jerusalem visited. And his fear of their opinion closed his heart. Jehovah used the Apostle Paul to help Peter put aside his fear of man. So I prayed to Jehovah to help me open my heart wide.
We turned to the wisdom of older ones, and they reminded us of Peter's ministry.
He may have been our age when he moved to where the need was greater in Babylon. They must have had concerns like ours. Could they make the trip?
Adapt to a different place? But they trusted in Jehovah to help them succeed.
We can do the same.
If we overcome our doubts,
and open our hearts wide,
we can conquer fear.
And receive Jehovah's blessing to the full.
Peter was like us. He loved Jehovah. He loved his brothers. He also had doubts and fears that sometimes held him back. But Peter relied on Jehovah to conquer fear. We can do the same. Our prayers are not limited to asking Jehovah for help with our concerns and our needs. We can also ask Jehovah to help others. We'll see that in action in our next video.
私は毎日、
I pray for my brothers and sisters every day because I know Jehovah is the hearer of prayer. ever since our baptism, we as a family were fully engaged in Christian activities. It was a busy yet fulfilling life. I really loved preaching. I enjoyed conducting Bible studies and talking to others about the truth. At one point, I was the only elder in the congregation. I tried to make shepherding calls on everyone, but I just did not have the time. So I developed a habit of praying for them many times during the day. I would mention them individually by name. I wanted Jehovah to protect his precious sheep from Satan's attacks. Sometime later, my wife fell seriously ill. After being hospitalized for a while, I decided to take care of her at home. I needed to step down from pioneering. Kuniko served Jehovah faithfully until her death. After a while, I became sick as well. One morning, I felt especially bad and couldn't move. Fortunately, I managed to survive somehow, but now I'm confined to a wheelchair. I can no longer walk in the ministry as I used to, or handle congregation responsibilities. I need help to change clothes and take a shower. I get really depressed when I think of the times when I was able to move around freely. But Jehovah never forgets the love we've shown. He is pleased to see us doing our very best in whatever circumstances we are in. I am limited in what I can do, but I can still pray. In my prayers, I mention the name of those in my congregation and my personal friends. I make a list of their names so as not to forget anyone. Through JW.org, I read about the brothers in Russia being arrested and the situation in Eritrea. So I make sure to include them in my prayers. The governing body and its helpers, those in full-time service, also need Jehovah's support. Jehovah is without a doubt the hearer of prayer. When I was the only elder in the congregation, or when my wife was sick in bed, he listened to my prayers. So I am confident prayers that I offer will help my fellow friends. Now, I do what I can in service, such as witnessing to caregivers. When I meet those whom I have not seen for a long time and tell them, "I've been praying for you," they often tell me how it has really helped them. Some even shed tears out of gratitude. I feel happy too. Although I'm getting physically weaker every day, my prayers are becoming more and more meaningful. I want to cherish this precious gift of prayer that Jehovah has given us as long as I live.
Takashi could easily dwell on all the things he can't do. Instead, he focuses on his brothers and sisters. He prays for them every day. And they're not generic prayers. He makes lists so that he doesn't miss anyone. And he goes to JW.org to learn about our brothers in need. Why does he make this effort? Takashi said, "I know that Jehovah is the hearer of prayer." Whether we're dealing with the effects of old age and illness, or with persecution and unrest, we face a common enemy, Satan the devil. How does Jehovah help us win this spiritual warfare? Brother Harold Corcoran explains how in this Bethel morning worship.
Our text highlights the fact that we are at war with Satan. War is defined as a state of hostility accompanied by actions to conquer or to destroy those viewed as the enemy. And the context of our text today, 1 Peter 5:8, talks about the type of enemy we have, a roaring lion seeking to devour someone. And that expression, roaring, denotes the howl of a beast in feast hunger, in fierce hunger. So we have a real enemy. And that's why the words of Jesus are so meaningful for us when he gave the model prayer. He said that Matthew 6:13, "Do not bring us into temptation, but deliver," or the footnote, "rescue us from the wicked one." Now, other Bible translations like the King James Version or the Revised Standard Version use an expression like, "deliver us from evil." Or the Contemporary English Version says, "protect us from evil." But that doesn't convey the real fierceness of a real enemy, doesn't it? It's more generic. And so Jesus knew the devil was real and he is a real enemy. And the devil has no remorse. He's fierce. He has no pity. He will take a person and with his traps and lures get him to do something bad in Jehovah's eyes. And then the person is overcome with guilt, and then like a fierce enemy, the devil comes along and stomps on him and makes him feel worse because he caved in and sinned. So how do we deal with such a powerful enemy? Well, in war, there are soldiers. So let's use an expression that the Apostle Paul used to describe our situation. Let's open our Bibles, please, to the book of 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 2, and we're going to read verses 3 and 4 and talk for a few moments about our being soldiers. 2 Timothy 2:3, "As a fine soldier of Christ Jesus, take your part in suffering adversity. No man serving as a soldier involves himself in the commercial businesses of life in order to gain the approval of the one who enrolled him as a soldier." Now, we become soldiers of Christ when we accept Jehovah's arrangements for salvation through Christ Jesus, and we dedicate our lives to him unreservedly for our entire life. We become a soldier. And like a soldier, we know that it's not going to be easy. There are going to be hardships and trials. And yet a fine soldier, his main objective is to stay loyal to his commanding officers and to those who are giving instructions. And likewise, we know it's not going to be easy. It's not easy. But we have chosen to become a soldier of Christ. Now, a soldier, like this loyal one being described, is far different from a mercenary. A mercenary is one who hires himself out to fight, but he may not have any devotion really to the cause. He's a hired man, and he's doing it for the reward only or for something else that he may gain. But we're not mercenaries. We're those with godly devotion, wholly devoted to Jehovah and loyal to Christ, so that we can be fine soldiers, loyal and true. Now, another aspect of soldiers are that they are identified by their distinctive uniforms or their particular fighting equipment. And that's why it helps to identify who's the friend and who's the foe in the middle of the battle. Their appearance makes that possible. Well, today, there is a clear difference, isn't there, between the soldiers of Satan and the soldiers of Christ. There's great enmity, but there's a sharp contrast in appearance, in attitude, in disposition, in motivation, in conduct. And that's why when we think about that, we think about the contrast between the works of the flesh described in Galatians chapter 5 and those who have the fruitage of God's Spirit. There is such a strong distinction between one serving God and one not serving Him. And that's why, too, we think about the type of armor we bear. Ephesians chapter 6 says, "Put on the complete suit of armor from God." So our very armor is from God. We do not use the tactics and the methods of the devil, but we are clearly identified as a soldier of Christ. And there can be no gray area here. We're either on one side or the other, correct? For example, suppose that you're a soldier and you're on guard duty, and it's evening, and you see someone approaching, and you cry out, "Halt! Who goes there, friend or foe?" And you hear back, "I'm both." There's an enemy. You can't be on both sides. Now, what is another aspect of being a good soldier in this fight? Well, let's open our Bibles to Philippians chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1, and we get to the concept of unity and working closely together in peace, because an army needs to be unified. Philippians chapter 1, verse 27 says, "Only behave in a manner worthy of the good news about the Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I am absent, I may hear about you and learn that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one soul," and the footnote, "are with one accord, striving side by side for the faith of the good news, and in no way being frightened by your opponents. This very thing is a proof of destruction for them, but of salvation for you, and this is from God." Well, we have this matter of unity, don't we? Shoulder to shoulder, side by side. And yet, one of the tactics of the devil is to get us divided and disjointed and fighting among ourselves. To turn the enemy on itself is a very effective war strategy. Even Jehovah used that, remember, against his enemies? In 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 20 through 23, there was the attack of Ammon, Moab, and the mountainous region of Seir against Judah. And what did Jehovah do? He confused them, they struck down each other, they helped destroy one another. And the devil, in a very sinister way, uses that same approach. How? Well, if he can get us to not get along with each other and turn on one another, then that's a very effective tactic. In fact, we remember the expression in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 26 and 27 about getting along. "Be wrathful, but do not sin. Do not let the sun set while you're still angry. Do not give the devil an opportunity." So when he sees discord and disunity, he can really amplify that. So we have to remember who are our real enemies. Now, our brothers may disappoint us, they may frustrate us, they may hurt us at times due to imperfections, but they're not the enemy. The devil and his hordes, those are the enemies. So we don't get to fighting with the wrong person. We keep in mind our brothers are with us. And in this connection, we just read in that scripture in Philippians, it talked about not being afraid. And do you remember something about being afraid when it related to a soldier in Israel's army? Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 8 says, "The officers should also ask the people, 'Who is fearful and faint-hearted?' He should return to his house so that he may not cause his brothers to lose heart as he has." Well, we do have an effect on each other. Can you imagine being in Joshua's army, getting ready to battle, and to your left is a soldier, and as you're about ready to leave for battle, he says to you, "We're going to die. We're not going to come back. Say goodbye to your family. This is it." Or he may say, "I'm not sure Joshua has Jehovah's backing like Moses did." All of that would be terrible. And so anyone in that category was to go home, because they do have an effect on others. How grateful, though, we are that we have positive, courageous brothers who trust in Jehovah. Examples in the Bible, but also modern-day examples, just like our brothers in Russia. Well, as soldiers and in this battle, we're not ignorant of Satan's designs. And yet, he studies us very carefully, and he knows our weaknesses. The September 1st, 1988 Watchtower had an article, "Stand Firm Against Satan's Machinations." And in that it said, the devil knows what our weaknesses are, but do we? If we don't identify them and then correct them, we will be defenseless at times. But it takes honesty and humility and an earnest desire to address that which is bad. Otherwise, we become a victim. So we need to ask, what are my weaknesses? Do I identify them? Do I work with them? And yet, with Jehovah's help, we can come off victorious in this battle. 1 Peter 5:10 says that Jehovah will finish our training. He will make us firm. He will make us strong. So with Jehovah's help, we can succeed. So may we all continue as fine soldiers of Christ, trusting in Jehovah, and win the battle against the enemy, the devil.
As Brother Corcoran mentioned, Satan has no pity. He'll try everything to lure us to sin against Jehovah. Last year, the Revised New World Translation in Spanish was released. This was exciting news for millions of our brothers and sisters. Since Spanish is the most widely spoken language among Jehovah's Witnesses, this took special effort. Enjoy the following report.
Soon after the governing body released a revised English edition of the New World Translation, they decided to revise a Spanish edition. They wanted it to be a modern, understandable translation for the entire Spanish-speaking world. Spanish is a mother tongue of around 480 million people, and it is also the most widely spoken language among Jehovah's Witnesses. This translation project would be a unique challenge. It eventually took 4.5 years to complete. Why did it take so long?
Apart from the translation process itself, the work was complicated by the wide geographic range of these Hispanic countries and their different cultures. This diversity meant that in different countries, the same Spanish word could mean different things. In other cases, the word may be unknown in certain areas or even sound objectionable to some.
To overcome these difficulties, the translators used 100 outside readers from many different countries to review the translated text progressively. These readers were of different ages, cultures, and backgrounds. These outside readers regularly received chapters of the Bible electronically, and then they introduced their suggested revisions. The translation teams took note of all their recommendations, and in some cases, they also sent them specific inquiries. Every verse was checked by 130 different people. Naturally, all of this took time. The work was finished in the spring of 2019. But then another challenge arose. We needed to print millions of Bibles to satisfy the demand of the Spanish-speaking field. This was a huge job for our printing presses in the United States and Japan. Despite working night and day, the task would take a long time, and naturally, everyone wanted to have the Bible right away.
So right at the Madrid International Convention, the governing body decided to release the Bible in digital format. This was several months before all the Bibles could be printed. The highlight of the Friday morning convention program was when Brother Los presented the newly revised Bible. But there was another surprise. Since at the convention, most brothers and sisters had their phones and tablets with them, they were able to immediately download the revised Bible.
How was that possible? 500 portable Wi-Fi devices were distributed among each of the 11 convention venues in Spain that were tied in with the Madrid Stadium. During the lunch break on Friday, practically everyone in attendance could download the revised Spanish edition of the New World Translation.
More than 1,200 volunteers were trained to give technical support to those who needed it. In this way, the brothers started to use the revised translation right away during the afternoon program.
We laughed and cried with joy. We knew it was a gift from Jehovah, which he was giving us at that moment. And also, we felt so happy because we'd been waiting a long time for it.
What I most like about this revision is that it's very easy to understand. Sometimes I think, but was this what we had before? It seems that it reaches my heart much quicker.
As you use it, you realize that many scriptures have been adjusted and that the faithful slave has worked very hard to make it easier to understand.
Without a doubt, this revised edition of the New World Translation is a wonderful gift for all our Spanish-speaking brothers. The Word of God has power, and this will be a powerful tool to help many people get to know Jehovah.
This month's theme was, "Pray continually so that you may not enter into temptation." By trusting in prayer, Narciso made major changes in his life and resisted temptations that tested his humility. The Apostle Peter's example showed us how to overcome fear so that we can show more love for Jehovah and our brothers. Rather than dwell on his limitations, Takashi finds joy in praying for his brothers and sisters every day. And the song, "Forgive Freely," reminds us that we can imitate Jehovah's quality of forgiveness to heal the pain of being hurt by someone we love. Before we conclude, let's visit our brothers and sisters in the Tierra del Fuego province of Argentina. Tierra del Fuego is a group of islands off the southernmost tip of the South American mainland. The main island rises to mountain glaciers and peaks of nearly 8,000 feet or 2,400 meters. Here, daylight varies greatly throughout the year, from about 17 hours during summer to some 7 hours during winter. But no matter how much sunlight there can be wind, ice, and snow every season of the year. Three congregations are in the city of Ushuaia, on the main island. To attend assemblies, the brothers have to cross a mountain range, a trip of about 125 miles or 200 kilometers. Sometimes snow and ice make the roads impassable. Our brothers are out in the ministry no matter what the weather has in store. In the winter, the sun doesn't rise high enough to be seen above the mountains in some parts of Ushuaia. When days are short, the brothers adapt and start preaching later to make the best use of sunlight. The brothers have organized a campaign to preach in rural communities and on remote islands, such as Navarino Island across the Beagle Channel. Recently, some made a special effort to learn English so that a good witness can be given to the many tourists who visit. There are over 300 publishers and some 47 regular pioneers in Ushuaia's three congregations. They're conducting 286 Bible studies. Our brothers and sisters in Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, send their warm love and greetings. From the world headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses, this is JW Broadcasting.